Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And all of it is brought to you by another brand new sponsor, Tripping.com. With one search, Tripping.com lets you filter, compare, and sort over 10 million available properties on trusted sites like VRBO, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, and more for your next vacation rental. And Jim, before we get on to our good martini, we should point out that it's cold again today. We might get some precipitation a little bit later today. So your kids are out of school again today for the third consecutive school day. They were out Thursday due to a dusting, Friday, I think, because it was cold, and today because it's cold and we might get a little something. So what do you make of the Fairfax County decision-making process these days?
I believe, actually, if you call their hotline to get updates, you just get either the theme to Game of Thrones and winter is here, or just panicked screaming. I'm kidding, of course. No one's there to answer the phone because they're all staying home because of the allegedly bad weather. Look, I'll give them the dusting on Thursday, even though I really think you could have gotten away with a delayed opening. I might even cut them some slack for Friday because it was about 10 degrees and it's really, really cold. They don't want the kids getting hypothermia waiting for the bus. Greg, there's no snow out today. It was cold, but it was not unbelievably cold today. But no, because there's a possibility of ice later today. And they just don't know if they could get the bus to the school and back home. It would be too icy. It's too frightening. We just can't live with any risk in this country. So schools are basically shut down until March. That basically sounds like that's how they're going to operate from here on out. I am sure listeners love hearing folks from the D.C. area complain about the weather. Let's point out that I'm not actually complaining. I'm complaining about other people who can't handle the weather.
Well, the Washington Post had a big story last week about people not being able to handle it. And in their effort to justify their complaining, they're having some interesting fun with the English language. So let me just point this out. This is from the Washington Post Express this morning. The headline is, Saturday was a cold record for the region. So you would think there was a record set, but no. In recent years, Washington has never had a day like Saturday, based on the chilling tale told by the thermometer. The low temperature of 11 degrees at 8:10 a.m. at Reagan National Airport was lower than any reading there since at least January 1st, 2016.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Coldest day in a year.
Jim, it reminds me last week when we had the special drawing for that Virginia House race that was completely tied, and David Yancey, the Republican, won the seat, and so Republicans have control of the State House. And the members of the board and the members of the media saying, man, drawing names out of a hat, this is unprecedented. And then the people on the board would point out, the people in the media admit in the same stories where they use the word unprecedented, this hasn't happened since 1971, which means it's not unprecedented, and so between record cold and unprecedented for something that has happened before in Virginia, it leads me to declare this.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
I think, Jim, ESPN is guilty of this because they want to tell you that what you just watched was the greatest game of all time or this athlete was the greatest of all time. It's, I don't know if it's about exaggeration or what it is, but trying to jack everything up into this historic event is leading to some pretty sloppy writing.
Sloppy indeed. I was going to say, I'm reminded when people keep emphasizing words and they don't actually mean what they think they do, I just keep being reminded of Joe Biden insisting that the word literally was a synonym for I really mean it, or I mean to emphasize this point, thinking back to the American people who literally stood on the brink of a new depression. Literally. Do you remember standing there? Kind of like the Cliffs of Moher, or something. Really, really steep cliff we were looking over. Everyone in the entire country, we just looked over it, and thankfully we didn't jump off. So there we are.
All right, let's move on to the actual good martini now. And this comes to us courtesy of Hot Air, as well as the NRA Institute for Legislative Action. Following a seemingly endless series of claims made by Michael Bloomberg and other Second Amendment opponents, three Democrats from the House and Senate pushed the Government Accountability Office to commission a report on internet gun sales. The prime drivers behind this effort were Elijah Cummings, Brian Schatz, and Elizabeth Warren. The claim on the table was that criminals and others who were not eligible to purchase firearms were using the internet to buy guns from unscrupulous sellers. Well, the study is finished and the results don't exactly support the claims. Here's what the NRA report says. In another embarrassment for the gun control lobby, a government investigation of online gun sales designed to determine whether private sellers would knowingly sell a firearm to an individual prohibited from possessing one determined that no, actually they would not. In 72 attempts undertaken over 2.5 years, undercover agents trying to buy guns through readily accessible internet sites failed exactly 100% of the time to complete a sale when the seller had reason to believe the buyer was prohibited or lived in another state. So, Jim, gosh, those loopholes really seem to be getting smaller.
I was looking at this and contemplating, you know how often you're watching, I don't know if you watch local news, you'll see some sort of, you know, this common household product could be killing you. We'll tell you which one it is at 11, right? And you all of a sudden you have to worry about this terrible thing. Isn't it nice to get a piece of news where it's like, hey, you know that threat you heard about? It turns out it really doesn't exist. You're safe. You're fine. You don't have to worry about people who are barred from owning a firearm purchasing one online. At least according to everything these investigators for the General Accounting Office did, every single time the sellers, you know, asked the right questions, required the appropriate paperwork. My favorite detail is that on 5 separate occasions, the GAO trolls were also banned from the websites where they were inquiring about murky purchases. In other words, not only will we not sell you the gun that you want because we found that you are not allowed to own them, we're going to block you from our website. We don't want you even snooping around or stuff like that. So I just think, you know, it's a testament to the responsibility of the gun stores and sellers that were contacted under this program. And it's just kind of nice to hear, you know, oh, we're constantly being told about all these loopholes and laws and, oh, my goodness, you're not saying, well, actually, no, it turns out that at least in this aspect, the system is working exactly as it was intended.
Yay. Well, I don't usually like to see government money in some of these studies, but this one particularly, I think, was beneficial. It obviously backfired on the people who were trying to make the gun industry into the villain here, but it clearly showed that it's not the boogeyman that all these people like to think it is and proclaim that it is every time there's a tragic shooting. So, Jim, let's move on to the bad martini now. And there's been a lot of chatter here in the last, I don't know, I guess about 12 hours ever since Oprah Winfrey got her award at the Golden Globes last night and her speech saying that now is the time for that people can come out and tell their stories. It's a new era and it's time to denounce, obviously, the scandal that has gone on in Hollywood officially since October, but has been going on behind the scenes, obviously, for decades. In Hollywood, you wrote very favorably about her speech today. There were a lot of good things in there. There are a couple things in there that made me wince. Part of me thinks, in the end, that Hollywood perhaps deserves a Golden Globe next year for its acting job at this year's Golden Globes, since a lot of these people knew about some of these things. But the bad martini is not the speech. The bad martini is that, given the rave reviews Oprah is getting, that there's already chatter of her running for president in 2020. CNN has already had several panels on this. I just saw Chris Cillizza looking very serious and nodding along as the story was being discussed. They had April Ryan on there and some other people. And Oprah Winfrey is apparently seriously thinking about it, Jim. So apparently it doesn't take much more than a well-received speech to get you on the short list for 2020.
You know, Greg, I you know, like everyone else, isn't it terrible that we have this celebrity who's never worked in government before, who's never stood for office before in office? Trump, clearly, all Trump did was host a television show, and now they're ready to make him president? Oh, can't you see all these problems? We know exactly what it takes to fix that. A totally different celebrity in the Oval Office who's never worked in politics or government before. I saw a lot of people griping about the speech in a way that didn't strike me as fair or worthwhile. When somebody stands up and says sexual harassment is bad, if anything, that's like the minimum bar. You know, I don't see any reason why we should be kind of snickering or you know, rolling our eyes over it. I think it was a message that needed to be said. However, if that's all it takes to get you to run for president, you know, we could get more qualified people to give that exact same speech, right? What this is this blurring of the line between what a president is and does and what the job of the chief executive is, what a commander-in-chief is supposed to do, and celebrities that we like. And you can point, you know, say this started with Obama. You can say this started with Reagan. You could say this started with Kennedy or FDR. Yes, personal charisma has always been a key part of the presidency. But you're not, the job isn't just being somebody you like or isn't just being somebody who says the sorts of things that you want them to do. Ideally, you'd want good judgment in that. I think the experience of the Trump presidency is demonstrating that, that the presidency is a very difficult entry-level job. I think if you, you know, little things like the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and the importance of having three people on it at all times, because otherwise you can't approve any natural gas pipeline in the country anywhere for any time until you have three people on there to get a quorum. These are the little details that like your average celebrity probably isn't going to know. And it's good to have, yeah, you know, yes, some of this can be papered over with good staffing and things like that. But again, the job of the president is not to be celebrity in chief. And it's very interesting hearing some people speculating, look, maybe we need to have our head of government and our head of the country split into two jobs with the presidency and prime minister or something like that. In a way, indulge the American public. If you want to have a figurehead celebrity person to do the, you know, attend the foreign funerals, I don't know what we used to consider the vice presidency, really. For all the ceremonial stuff, fine, we can do that. But please put real serious thinking, accomplished people who can make the tough choices in the tough times and weigh the difficult choices. So many people are reminding, you know, look, in addition to everything else, look, you know, lots of people out there love Oprah and God bless her. But Greg, I didn't realize she was one of the people who had Jenny McCarthy on to talk about how terrible vaccines are.
Great.
Right? I mean, like, and so somebody's like, well, maybe she doesn't believe that. Okay. So like which answer is less harmful, that Oprah would put people like that on her show that she didn't believe? But she felt needed a platform and exposure anyway to say, hey, stop vaccinating your kids. Or did she did believe it, which I think probably that's worse. But there are two pretty bad options there. So, look, you know, the idea that we're going to, you know, get out of the problems with another celebrity president does not. It's, like, it's deeply dispiriting to see people, you know, who seem to have recognized the problems with Trump turn around and believe that another celebrity is exactly the way to solve this. And hopefully this doesn't come to pass. My suspicion is that she won't run. After all, I mean, Greg, why would you want to step down from being Oprah into just being president of the United States?
I think we might be through the looking glass here because, you know, you see these polls of people who don't know who the vice president is, but they can tell you everything that happened this week on the Kardashians reality show. The fact that reality shows and celebrities are blending into our actual important issues and our important life, I think that's only going to increase rather than decrease. I don't know if we'll see necessarily a slew of celebrities running for president, but I don't think we're going backwards in that area necessarily.
Greg, call me crazy. I like a difference between the McLaughlin Group and Entertainment Tonight. Different people, different shows, talking about different things. Go ahead. You guys go enjoy that stuff. If you want to watch TMZ, go right ahead. Be my guest. Enjoy that stuff. I don't muck around in your world. Please stop mucking around in mine. So anyway.
I completely agree with
Monday
you.
Snobbery for the day.
All right. Well, if you need to get away from all the nonsense you're seeing in Hollywood and in politics, Tripping.com is the way to go. Did you know that an average family visits 5 totally different websites before booking a vacation rental? You can spend less time planning your next trip and more time relaxing with Tripping.com, the world's number one site for vacation rentals.
Tripping.com is trusted by millions of travelers and featured by the New York Times, Travel and Leisure, Forbes, and other publications. Whether you're looking for a cabin or a beachfront home to get away to this winter, or already looking ahead to vacations this spring, Tripping.com can help you find the perfect place to stay. Vacation rentals offer flexibility, perks, and amenities that hotels don't, like multiple bedrooms, backyards, hot tubs, free Wi-Fi, and even fully stocked kitchens so you can plan and cook your own meals. It's great for families and for large groups.
And if you're like us this weekend and you're watching football, I'm sure the first thought that came to mind is, I have got to travel to Pittsburgh next weekend. I've got to see the Jaguars, and I've got to see them in person. This is just too fascinating to miss. If you watch the game, they look terrible, but they were slightly better than the Bills. Anyway, but if you want to go to Pittsburgh, I did a quick check at Tripping.com. They've got 16 different sites factored in there. They're a fantastic aggregator, so they're your best spot to find all the different options wherever you're going. And just by looking it up, you can get a nice house for 2-3 days in Pittsburgh at the same price you're going to pay for a hotel. You can stretch out. You got your own kitchen to make your own meals and so forth. A lot more relaxing and a lot more space. And that's just one example. With Tripping.com, one search lets you filter, compare, and sort over 10 million available properties on trusted sites like VRBO, TripAdvisor, Booking.com, and more. Don't wonder if you're getting the best deal. You'll save an average of 18% per night by booking your vacation with Tripping.com. So don't forget, if you want to save time and money, while booking the perfect vacation rental for your next trip, head to tripping.com/martini today. That's TRIPPING.com/martini. Tripping.com/martini. All right, Jim, let's get to our crazy martini now. And that played out during the Sunday morning shows, specifically on State of the Union with Jake Tapper on CNN. He had Trump advisor Stephen Miller on. Turned out most of the discussion was about the Fire and Fury book by Michael Wolff. As a result, Tapper says he had questions on other issues waiting for Miller and said Miller was filibustering. But Miller decided wasn't really that interested in answering Tapper's questions anymore and was clearly there to go on the offensive against CNN and what he thought was unfair reporting. So eventually the interview, which lasted about 12 minutes, devolved into this.
I was booked to talk about the very issues I'm just describing, and you're not even asking about them because they're not interesting facts to you.
That's not true. I have plenty of questions on immigration. You've attempted to filibuster by talking about your flight to the president.
The reason why I want to talk about the president's experiences, what I've seen with him traveling to meet dozens of foreign leaders, with his incredible work.
Okay, you're not answering the questions.
No,
I understand.
You have 24 hours a day of anti-Trump material.
You're
not going to give 3 minutes for the American people
to hear the
real experience of Donald Trump.
There's one viewer that you care about right now, and you're being obsequious.
You're being a factotum in order to please him.
Okay.
I think I've wasted enough of my viewers' time.
Jim, you could obviously say that the attention to this book has probably been overblown, but at the same time, it's Jake Tapper's show. He can ask whatever questions you want, and when you agree to come on there, that's the deal you sign up for. So what do you make of this back and forth between Miller and Tapper?
One of the lessons of life is sometimes your problems are benefits in disguise, or there are advantages to things that seem like obstacles to you. Listeners may occasionally hear the audio between Greg and myself, that occasionally Skype doesn't cooperate with us, Greg. And it really doesn't like it when you and I talk at the same time, which means generally, I have to let you finish, make sure you finish your point. You have to make sure I finish my point. And you know what's great about that, Greg? Our show never sounds like that. this endless, blah, 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 no, no, no. You're attacking me by joke. No, I'm not attacking. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, my God. It's insufferable. How can you listen to that? Nobody can get any point in anywhere. So anyway, it was, I find particularly unedifying. This way, the problem is what pleases Trump in a good television interview, which is to say, attack the host, attack the network that you're appearing on, claim that they're being unfair, praise the president in the most effusive way possible. Don't bother with numbers. Don't bother with details. Don't bother with, any of that kind of stuff. That's what pleases the president. I'm not sure necessarily that's the single most effective argument for this administration for what it's doing. Or at the very least, you'd like to vary it up a little. Maybe you send somebody out to play Rock'em Sock'em Robot in a Trump to punch the metaphorically punch the host in the jaw. But also, it might be a good idea to put somebody out there to say, hey, we've got some really good economic numbers to talk about, or here's what we already seeing effects of the tax bill. Here's how things are going. Border security. There are, substantive issues to talk about. Now, it's interesting. Tapper said, I'm trying to talk about these serious issues. And Miller said, you're not asking me about these serious issues. And either way, it just kept coming back to each guy making very, very clear the contempt that they hold the other. But apparently, at least according to one vague anecdote, Greg, it sounded like Stephen Miller just couldn't get enough of it.
Yes, there's actually an account that he had to be removed from the set forcibly because he was so upset with the way that Tapper conducted and ended the interview. And then to make things even more bizarre, Jim, CNN denied being part of that particular part of the story. So their statement is that they had no statement on it.
This was particularly weird because the story comes out that Stephen Miller had to be removed from, escorted from the CNN set. Now, it's worth noting that usually, when you leave, they have somebody there who's here to, helps you come back, figure your way back through the offices, from the studio, through the offices, back to the green room, get your coat, take off your makeup, all that kind of stuff. So when they say escorted, I suppose it could be that, but it sounded like he would not would not leave, which seemed really odd and almost like Miller's having some sort of breakdown or something like that. But here's the weird thing. So a CBS News producer apparently issues this, says they have a statement saying that he was removed by security, which is more than just being escorted, right? That's the rent-a-cops coming and taking you out. But then something really weird. The vice president of communications for CNN, Matt Dornick, says this is not a statement from CNN. We did not issue a statement. They've asked the person to remove that and to decline that. Now here's the thing. We did not issue a statement, Greg, is not the same as this did not happen.
Right.
So I don't quite understand whether this is, you know, look, this is a false account of events and we're attempting to throw cold water on it, or we just don't want to talk about it. My suspicion is if this really happens, I have a very tough time believing that anybody else at CNN wouldn't have a camera, other guests appearing on the program, people in the green room. There are a lot of people around a TV studio. The idea that this could occur and would, you know, not have be widely reported and witnessed and all that stuff seemed really, really strange and odd to me. So I don't know whether this happened or not. The kind of carefully worded CNN statement is weird. Getting into and out of interviews, Greg, this is kind of the basic blocking and tackling of being in administration. when they say the interview is over, traditionally you leave.
That's generally how I like to conduct it when I'm on the other side, yeah. You would think they would know the drill at this point. And as we discussed last week, Jim, once again, the drama exceeds anything that's happening policy-wise. How many people even have any clue what's on the president's plate and on his agenda this week? So anyway, happy Monday, and I'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to go today to tripping.com so you can filter, compare, and sort over 10 million available properties for your next vacation rental. That's tripping.com/martini. Join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.